Detailed summary by chapter of Mathura Lila as found in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto. Chapter 41. This chapter describes how Lord Sri Krishna entered the city of Mathura, killed a washerman, and bestowed benedictions upon a weaver and a garland maker named Sudama. Krishna, Balaram, and Akrura reached Mathura late in the afternoon. After meeting up with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherders who had gone on ahead, Krishna asked Akrura to return home, promising to visit Akrura after Krishna had killed Kamsa. Unhappily, Akrura bid Krishna goodbye, went to King Kamsa to inform him that Krishna and Balaram had come, and then went home. Krishna and Balaram took the cowherder boys with them to see the splendorous city of Mathura. As they all entered, the women of Mathura eagerly came out of their houses to see Krishna. They had often heard about Krishna and had long since developed a deep attraction for Krishna. But now that they were actually seeing Krishna, they were overwhelmed with happiness, and all their distress due to the absence of Krishna was eradicated. Krishna and Balaram then came upon Kamsa's wicked washerman. Krishna asked the washerman for some of the first-class garments he was carrying, but the washerman refused and even chastised the two brothers. Upon this, Krishna became very angry and beheaded the washerman with his fingertips. The assistants of the washerman, seeing his untimely end, dropped their bundles of clothes right there on the spot and ran off in all directions. Krishna and Balaram then took some of the garments which they especially fancied. Next, a weaver approached the two lords and arrayed Krishna and Balaram suitably. For that service, the weaver received from Krishna opulence in this life and liberation in the next. Krishna and Balaram then went to the house of the garland maker, Sudama. Sudama offered Krishna and Balaram his full obeisances, worshipped them by bathing their feet, and offering Krishna and Balaram such items as argya and sandalwood paste. Then Sudama chanted prayers in the honor of Krishna and Balaram. Then the garland maker Sudama adorned Krishna and Balaram with garlands of fragrant flowers. Being pleased, Krishna and Balaram offered the garland maker Sudama whatever benedictions he desired, and then Krishna and Balaram moved on. Chapter 42. This chapter describes the benediction Trivakra or Kubja received, the breaking of the sacrificial bow, the destruction of Kamsa's soldiers, the inauspicious omens Kamsa saw, and the festivities at the wrestling arena. After leaving the house of Sudama, Lord Krishna came upon Trivakra, a young hunchbacked maidservant of Kamsa, who was carrying a tray of fine ointments. Krishna asked Kubja who she was and requested some ointment from her. Entranced by Krishna's beauty and his joking words, Trivakra gave both Krishna and Balaram a good deal of ointment, and in return, Krishna stepped on Kubja's toes with his lotus feet, took hold of her chin, lifted, and thus straightened Kubja's spine. Now the beautiful and charming Trivakra then grabbed the edge of Krishna's upper cloth and asked Krishna to come to her house. Krishna replied that after he had taken care of some business, Certainly he would come and relieve her mental torment. Then Krishna and Balaram continued their sightseeing tour of Mathura. And as Krishna and Balaram walked along the king's road, the merchants worshipped them with various offerings. Krishna asked where the bow sacrifice was to take place. And when Krishna arrived at the arena, Krishna saw the wonderful bow, which resembled that of Lord Indra's. Despite the guards' protest, Krishna forcibly picked up the bow, easily strung it, and within an instant broke the bow in half, which produced an ear-splitting sound, filling the heavens and striking terror into the heart of Kamsa. The many guards attacked Krishna, crying out, "Seize him! Kill him!" But Krishna and Balaram simply picked up the two halves of the bow and beat the guards to death. Then Krishna and Balaram next annihilated a company of soldiers which were sent by Kamsa. And then Krishna and Balaram left the arena, continuing their tour. When the people of Mathura saw the amazing prowess and beauty of Krishna and Balaram, they thought Krishna and Balaram must be two chief demigods. Indeed, as the residents of Mathura gazed upon the two lords, they enjoyed all the blessings which the gopis had previously predicted. Then, at sunset, Krishna and Balaram returned to the cowherders' camp for their evening meal. Krishna and Balaram then passed the night resting comfortably. But King Kamsa was not so fortunate, because when Kamsa heard how Krishna and Balaram had easily broken the mighty bow and destroyed his soldiers, Kamsa spent the night in great anxiety. Both while awake and while dreaming, Kamsa saw many ill omens portending Kamsa's imminent death. And thus, Kamsa's great fears ruined any chance for peaceful rest. The next day at dawn, the wrestling festival began. Crowds of people from the city and outlying districts entered the arena and took their seats in the lavishly decorated galleries. His heart trembling, Kamsa sat down on the royal dais and invited Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherder men to come and sit in their places, which they did so after offering Kamsa their gifts. The musical overture then began as the sounds of the wrestlers slapping their arms resounded throughout the arena. Chapter 43. This chapter tells how Lord Krishna killed the lordly elephant Kuvalayapida, how Krishna and Balaram entered the wrestling arena, and what Krishna said to the wrestler Chanura. After finishing their early morning rituals, Krishna and Balaram heard kettle drums heralding the start of the wrestling match, and they went to see the festivities. At the gate of the wrestling arena, Krishna and Balaram encountered an elephant named Kuvalayapida, who attacked Krishna at the urging of its keeper. The mighty elephant grabbed at Krishna with his trunk, but Lord Krishna struck back and then disappeared from the beast's sight among his legs. Enraged at not being able to see Krishna, Kuvalayapida sought Krishna out with his sense of smell and seized Krishna. But Lord Krishna pulled loose. In this way, Krishna teased and tormented Kuvalayapida, finally yanking out one of his tusks and beating Kuvalayapida and his caretakers to death. sprinkled with the elephant's blood, and carrying one of the tusks from the elephant on his shoulder as a weapon, Lord Krishna appeared unprecedentedly beautiful as Krishna entered the wrestling arena. There in the arena, various classes of people saw Krishna in different ways according to their specific relationship with Krishna. When King Kamsa heard how Krishna and Balaram had killed Kuvalaya Pida, Kamsa then realized Krishna and Balaram must be invincible, and so Kamsa became filled with anxiety. Meanwhile, the members of the audience became joyful as they reminded one another about Krishna and Balaram's amazing pastimes. The people declared that Krishna and Balaram must be two expansions of the Supreme Lord Narayana, who had descended into the house of Vasudeva. Wrestler Chanura then stepped forward, challenging Krishna and Balaram to wrestle, saying that King Kamsa wished to see such a wrestling match. Krishna then replied, "Although we are merely nomadic forest folk, we are nonetheless subjects of the king. Thus, we will not hesitate to please Kamsa with an exhibition of wrestling." As soon as Chanura heard this, he suggested that Krishna should wrestle him and that Balaram should wrestle Mushtika. Chapter 44. This chapter tells how Krishna and Balaram killed the wrestlers, how Krishna killed Kamsa, and how Krishna consoled the wives of Kamsa, and also how the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, reunited with their original mother and father, namely Vasudeva and Devaki. Deciding to wrestle, Lord Krishna faced off against Chanura, and Lord Baladev took on Mushtika. Battling arm to arm, head to head, knee to knee, and chest to chest, the opponents attacked each other so fiercely that they appeared to be harming even their own bodies. In the arena, the ladies, seeing the violent battle, began to condemn the king and all the members of the assembly. "A respectable audience should never have allowed a wrestling match between such huge wrestlers whose limbs are as tough as lightning bolts and such tender young boys who are just entering youth. An intelligent person should never enter an assembly if one sees injustice being done there." Because Vasudeva and Devaki did not fully understand the power of Krishna and Balaram, they became extremely unhappy when they heard the women of the audience speak these words. Sri Krishna then grabbed Chanura's arms, whirling him around several times and throwing him to the ground, thus killing him. And Mushtika met a similar fate. After being struck powerfully by the palm of Lord Baladev, Mushtika began vomiting blood and fell down dead. Thereupon the wrestlers named Kuta, Shala, and Toshala came forward, but Krishna and Balaram easily killed them with the blows of their fists and feet. The remaining wrestlers, fearing for their lives, all fled. Except for Kamsa, everyone present cheered Krishna and Balaram. But the king, in a rage, stopped the festive music and ordered that Vasudev, Nanda, Ugrasena, and all the cowherders be severely punished, and that Krishna and Balaram should be driven from the assembly. Krishna then became furious when he heard Kamsa speaking in this way. And so Krishna instantly leaped onto the lofty royal dais. Krishna grabbed Kamsa by his hair, hurling Kamsa down onto the floor of the wrestling arena, and Krishna threw himself on top of Kamsa. In this way, Kamsa met his death. Because out of fear, Kamsa had always thought of Krishna. After his death, Kamsa gained the liberation of having a form like Krishna's. Then, Kamsa's 8 brothers attacked Krishna, but Balaram easily killed each of them with his club, just as a lion kills defenseless animals. Kettle drums then resounded in the sky as the joyful demigods rained down flowers, chanting the glories of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Kamsa's 2 wives, Asti and Prapti, grieving for their husband, lamented that Kamsa had died because of his violence toward other living beings and because of Kamsa's lack of respect for Krishna, the Supreme Soul, who creates, maintains, and destroys the entire universe. Krishna then consoled the 2 widows and had funeral rites performed for Kamsa and his brothers. And then Krishna released his mother and father from bondage. Krishna offered obeisances at his parents' feet, but they, now understanding Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, did not embrace Krishna. Chapter 45. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna consoled Devaki, Vasudev, and Nanda Maharaj, and installed Ugrasena as king. It also relates how Krishna and Balaram completed their education, retrieved the dead son of their guru, and then returned home. Noting that his parents, Vasudev and Devaki, had now realized his true position as God, Sri Krishna expanded his yoga maya to again make them think of him as their dear child. Then, with Lord Balaram, Krishna approached Vasudev and Devaki, saying how unhappy he was that he and they had been unable to enjoy the mutual satisfaction of parents and children who lived together. Then Krishna spoke, "Even in a lifetime of 100 years, no son can ever repay the debt he owes his parents, from whom he receives his very body. Any capable son who fails to support his parents will be forced in the hereafter to eat his own flesh. Indeed, any person who does not maintain and nourish those under his care, namely children, wife, spiritual masters, brahmanas, elderly parents, and so on, is simply a living corpse. It was out of fear of King Kamsa that we could not serve you. So now, please forgive us." Vasudev and Devaki, overcome with emotion upon hearing these words of Sri Krishna, embraced their 2 sons and in ecstasy shed a torrent of tears. Having thus satisfied his mother and father, Lord Krishna offered Kamsa's kingdom to Krishna's maternal grandfather, Ugrasena, and then Krishna arranged for all his family members who had fled in fear of Kamsa to finally return to their homes. Protected by the mighty arms of Krishna and Balaram, the Yadavas began to enjoy supreme bliss. Next, Krishna and Balaram approached Nanda Maharaj and praised him for having cared so lovingly for them, the sons of another. Krishna then spoke to Nanda, "My dear father, please return to Braja. Knowing how much you and our other relatives are now suffering in separation from us, Balaram and I will come to see you as soon as we have satisfied your friends here in Mathura." Krishna then worshipped Nanda with various offerings, and Nanda felt overwhelmed with love for his sons. After tearfully embracing both Krishna and Balaram, Nanda Maharaj took the cowherder men and departed for Braja. Next, Vasudev had his priest perform his son's ritual of second birth, or Brahminical initiation. Both Krishna and Balaram then went to Garga Muni to take the vow of Brahmacharya, or celibacy. Afterwards, Krishna and Balaram, though omniscient, desired to reside at the school of a spiritual master, and thus they went to live with Sandipani Muni at Avantipur. To teach the proper way to respect the Guru, Krishna and Balaram served their spiritual master with great devotion, just as they would a deity of the Supreme Lord Himself. Sandipani Muni, pleased by the service of Krishna and Balaram, imparted to them detailed knowledge of all the Vedas, together with their six corollaries and the Upanishads. Krishna and Balaram needed to hear each subject explained only once in order to assimilate it completely. And thus, within 64 days, Krishna and Balaram learned the 64 traditional arts. Before taking leave of their guru, the two lords offered Sandipani Muni any gift he desired. The wise Sandipani, seeing their amazing prowess, requested Krishna and Balaram to bring back his son, who had died in the ocean at Prabhas. Krishna and Balaram mounted a chariot and went to Prabhas, where they approached the shore and worshipped the presiding deity of the ocean. Krishna asked the ocean to return his spiritual master's son, and the lord of the ocean replied that a demon dwelling within the ocean named Panchajana had taken the boy away. Hearing this, Sri Krishna entered the ocean, killed that demon, and took the shell which had grown from his body. But when Krishna did not find the son of his guru within the demon's belly, Krishna then went to the planet of Yamaraj, the lord of death. Yamaraj himself came forward when he heard Krishna blowing the Panchajanya kanchal and devotedly worshipped Lord Krishna. Krishna then asked Yamaraj for Sandipani Muni's son, and Yamaraj immediately gave the boy to the two lords, Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram then returned to their spiritual master, presenting Sandipani Muni with his son, and they requested Sandipani Muni to choose yet another favor. But Sandipani Muni replied that by having obtained disciples such as Krishna and Balaram, all of his desires were now fulfilled. Sandipani Muni thus instructed Krishna and Balaram to return home. Krishna and Balaram traveled home by chariot, and upon their arrival, all the citizens became unlimitedly ecstatic to see Krishna and Balaram, just like persons who have regained a lost treasure. Chapter 48. In this chapter, Lord Sri Krishna first visits Tripakra, also known as Kubja, and enjoys with her, And then Krishna visits Akura. Krishna then sends Akura to Hastinapur to satisfy the Pandavas. After Uddhava had related to Sri Krishna the news of Vraja, Krishna went to the home of Trivakra Kubja, which was decorated with diverse ornamentation conducive to sexual enjoyment. Trivakra welcomed Krishna with great respect, giving Krishna a raised seat, and together with her female companions, worshipped Krishna. Kubja also offered a seat to Uddhava, befitting his position, but Uddhava simply touched the seat and sat on the floor. Lord Krishna then reclined on an opulent bed as the maidservant Trivakra elaborately washed and decorated herself. Then Kubja approached Krishna. Krishna invited Trivakra to the bed and began to enjoy with her in various ways. By embracing Lord Krishna, Kubja freed herself of the torment of lust. Trivakra asked Krishna to remain with her for some time, and the considerate Lord Krishna promised to fulfill her request in due course. Krishna then returned home with Uddhava. Apart from offering sandal paste to Krishna, Trivakra had never performed any pious acts. Yet, simply on the strength of the piety of this single act, Kubja attained the rare personal association of Sri Krishna. Lord Sri Krishna next went to the house of Akura along with Lord Baladev and Uddhava. Akura honored the three of them, bowing down and presenting them with suitable sitting places. Akura then worshipped Ram and Krishna, washed their feet, and poured the water on his head. Akura also offered Ram and Krishna many prayers. Lord Krishna was pleased with the prayers of Akura, and Krishna told Akura that since he, Akura, was in fact their paternal uncle, Krishna and Balaram should be the recipients of Akura's protection and mercy. Lord Krishna then praised Akura as a saint and purifier of the sinful, and so Krishna asked Akura to visit Hastinapur just to find out how the Pandavas, now deprived of their father, were faring. Finally, Krishna returned home, taking Balaram and Uddhava with him. Chapter 49. This chapter describes how Akura went to Hastinapur and how Akura saw Dhritarashtra's unfair behavior toward his nephews, the Pandavas, and then Akura returned to Mathura. On the order of Lord Krishna, Akura went to Hastinapur, where he met the Kauravas and Pandavas, and then set about to find out how Dhritarashtra was treating the Pandavas. This task would keep Akura in Hastinapur for several months. Vidura and Kunti Devi described to Akura in detail how Dhritarashtra's sons, envious of the exalted qualities of the Pandavas, had tried to destroy the Pandavas by various evil means and were contemplating further atrocities. With tearful eyes, Kunti Devi asked Akura, "Do my parents and other relatives, headed by Krishna and Balaram, do they ever think of me and my sons? And will Krishna ever come to console us in our distress?" Then Kunti Devi began to chant Lord Krishna's holy names for her protection. And Kunti also chanted mantras expressing surrender to Krishna. Akura assured Kunti Devi, "Since your sons were born from demigods like Dharma and Vayu, there is no reason to expect that any misfortune will befall them. Rather, you should be confident that very soon they will receive the greatest possible good fortune. Then, Akura delivered to Dhritarashtra the message from Krishna and Balaram. You have assumed the royal throne after the death of your brother Pandu. Seeing all equally, which is the religious duty of kings, you should protect all your subjects and personal relations. And by such fair behavior, you will gain all fame and good fortune. But if you act otherwise, you will attain only infamy in this life and condemnation to a hellish existence in the next. A living being takes birth all alone, and alone gives up his or her life. Alone, one enjoys the fruits of piety and sin. So if one fails to understand the true identity of the self, and instead maintains one's progeny by indulging in evil deeds, then surely one will go to hell. One should therefore learn to understand the unsteadiness of material existence, which is like a sleeper's dream, or a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy. And one should thus control the mind in order to remain peaceful and equipoised. O Akura, I cannot hear enough of your beneficial words, which are like the sweet nectar of immortality. But because the tight knot of affection for my sons has made me biased towards them, your statements cannot become fixed within my mind. No one can transgress the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. God's purpose for descending into the Yadu dynasty will inevitably be fulfilled. Knowing now the mentality of Dhritarashtra, Akura took permission from his dear relatives and friends and returned to Mathura. And there, Akura related everything to Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Chapter 50. This chapter relates how Lord Krishna defeated Jarasandha 17 times in battle and then constructed the city of Dwaraka. After Kamsa was killed, his two queens, Asti and Prapti, went to the home of their father, Jarasandha, sorrowfully describing to him how Krishna had made them widows. Upon hearing this account, King Jarasandha became angry. Jarasandha vowed to rid the earth of all the Yadavas, and so Jarasandha gathered an immense army, laying siege to Mathura. And when Sri Krishna saw Jarasandha attacking, the Lord considered the reasons for his descent to this world, deciding to destroy Jarasandha's army, which was a burden to the earth. Then, two effulgent chariots suddenly appeared, equipped with drivers and furnishings, together with all the Lord's personal weapons. Seeing this, Lord Krishna addressed his brother, Baladev. My dear brother Balaram, Jarasandha is now attacking Mathura Puri. So please, mount your chariot and let us go destroy the army of the enemy. Krishna and Balaram then took up their weapons, mounted their chariots, and went forth from the city of Mathura. And when Lord Krishna came before Jarasandha's army, Krishna sounded his conchal, striking fear into his enemies' hearts. King Jarasandha surrounded Krishna and Balaram with his soldiers, chariots, and so on. And the women of the city, having climbed up to the roofs of the palaces, became extremely unhappy because they could not see Krishna and Balaram. Then Krishna twanged his bow and started to rain down a torrent of arrows upon the enemy soldiers. Soon, Jarasandha's unfathomable army had been totally annihilated. Lord Baladev then arrested Jarasandha and was about to bind him up with ropes when Sri Krishna had Baladev release the king. Lord Krishna reasoned that Jarasandha would assemble yet another army and return again to fight. This would simply facilitate Krishna's goal of removing the earth's burden. After having been released, Jarasandha returned to his kingdom, Magadha, and vowed to perform austerities with the aim of avenging his defeat. The other kings advised Jarasandha that his defeat was only a reaction of his karma. Being thus informed, King Jarasandha withdrew to his kingdom with a heavy heart. Sri Krishna then rejoined the citizens of Mathura, who began rejoicing, singing songs of triumph, and arranging victory celebrations. Krishna brought all the warriors' jewelry and ornaments that had been picked up from the battlefield and presented them to Maharaj Ugrasena. Jarasandha attacked the Yadavas in Mathura 17 times, and each time his armies were totally destroyed. Then, as Jarasandha prepared to attack for the 18th time, a warrior named Kalayavana, who had been searching for a worthy opponent, was sent by Narada Muni to fight the Yadavas. With 30 million soldiers, Kalayavana laid siege to the Yadava capital. Lord Krishna looked upon this attack with concern, for Krishna knew that with Jarasandha's arrival imminent, there was a serious danger that the simultaneous attack of these two enemies might endanger the Yadavas. Therefore, Krishna constructed a wonderful city within the sea as a safe haven for the Yadavas. Then, Krishna brought them all there by his mystic power. This city was fully populated with members of all four social orders, and within it, no one felt the pangs of thirst and hunger. Various demigods, headed by Indra, each offered as tribute to Lord Krishna the same opulences they had originally obtained from Krishna in order to establish their positions of authority. Once Krishna saw his subjects safely settled, Lord Sri Krishna took permission from Lord Baladev and went out of Mathura unarmed. Chapter 51. This chapter describes how Lord Sri Krishna caused Muchukunda to kill Kalayavana with his harsh glance. And this chapter also relates the conversation between Muchukunda and Lord Krishna. After placing his family members safely within the Dwaraka fortress, Sri Krishna went out of Mathura. Krishna appeared like the rising moon, and Kalayavana saw that Krishna's brilliantly effulgent body matched Narada's description of the Lord, and thus the Yavana knew Krishna was the personality of Godhead. Seeing that Krishna carried no weapons, Kalayavana put his own weapons aside and ran after Krishna from behind, wanting to fight with him. Sri Krishna ran from the Yavana, staying just barely beyond Kalayavana's grasp at every step, eventually leading Kalayavana a long distance towards a mountain cave. As Kalayavana ran, he hurled insults at Krishna. But Kalayavana could not grasp Krishna, since Kalayavana's stock of impious karma was not yet depleted. Sri Krishna entered the cave, whereupon Kalayavana followed after Krishna, but saw a man lying on the ground. Taking the sleeping man for Sri Krishna, Kalayavana kicked the man. The sleeping man had been sleeping for a very long time and now, having been violently awakened, looked around angrily in all directions and thus saw Kalayavana. The sleeping man stared harshly at Kalayavana, igniting a fire in Kalayavana's body, and within a moment, Kalayavana's body burnt to ashes. This extraordinary person was a son of Mandhata named Muchukunda. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow. Previously, Muchukunda had spent many long years helping to protect the demigods from the demons. When the demigods had eventually obtained Kartikeya as their protector, they allowed Muchukunda to retire, offering him any boon other than liberation, which only Lord Vishnu can bestow. Muchukunda had chosen from the demigods the benediction of being covered by sleep, and thus, since then, Muchukunda had been lying asleep within the cave. Upon Kalayavana's immolation, Sri Krishna showed himself to Muchukunda, who was struck with wonder at seeing the incomparable beauty of Krishna's body. Muchukunda asked Lord Krishna who he was and also explained to Krishna his own identity. Muchukunda said, "After growing weary from remaining awake for a long time, I was enjoying my sleep here in this cave when some stranger disturbed me and, suffering the reactions of his own sins, was burnt to ashes. O Lord, O vanquisher of all enemies, it is my great fortune that I now have the vision of your beautiful form." Lord Sri Krishna then told Muchukunda who he was and offered Muchukunda a boon. The wise Muchukunda, understanding the futility of material life, asked only that he might be allowed to take shelter of Lord Sri Krishna's lotus feet. Pleased at this request, Krishna said to Muchukunda, "My devotees are never enticed with material benedictions offered to them. Only non-devotees, namely yogis and speculative philosophers, are interested in material benedictions, having mundane desires in their hearts. My dear Muchukunda, you will have perpetual devotion for me. So now, always remaining surrendered to me, go and perform penances in order to eradicate the sinful reactions incurred from the killing you had to do in your role as a warrior. In your next life, you will become a first-class Brahmana and you will attain me." And thus, Lord Sri Krishna offered his blessings to Muchukunda. Chapter 52. This chapter describes how Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, running as if in fear, went to Dwaraka. Then Lord Krishna heard the message of Rukmini from the mouth of a Brahmana and chose Rukmini as his first wife. King Muchukunda, having been shown mercy by Lord Sri Krishna, offered obeisances and circumambulated the Lord. King Muchukunda left the cave and saw that humans, animals, trees and plants were all smaller than when he had fallen asleep. From this, Muchukunda could understand that the age of Kali was at hand. Thus, in a mood of detachment from all material association, King Muchukunda began worshipping the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari. Sri Krishna then returned to Mathura, which was still under siege by the barbarian army. Krishna destroyed this army, collected all the valuables the soldiers had been carrying, and set off for Dwaraka. Just then, Jarasandha arrived on the scene with the force of 23 Akshauhinis. Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, acting as if fearful, left their riches aside and ran far away. Because Jarasandha could not appreciate their true power, Jarasandha ran after Krishna and Balaram. After running a long distance, Rama and Krishna came to a mountain named Pravarshana and proceeded to climb it. Jarasandha thought Krishna and Balaram had hidden inside a cave, and so he looked all over for them. Unable to find Krishna and Balaram, Jarasandha built fires on all sides of the mountain. As the vegetation on the mountain slopes burst into flames, Krishna and Balaram jumped off the peak of the mountain. After reaching the ground, unseen by Jarasandha and his followers, Krishna and Balaram returned to the Dwaraka fort, which floated within the sea. Jarasandha incorrectly decided that Ram and Krishna had burned to death in the fire, and so Jarasandha took his army back to his kingdom. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thus ends the detailed summary by chapter of Mathura Leela as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Krishna book, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.